Welcome to the podcast Help to Grow Talk, where we talk about growing your communication skills. How can you better communicate and change the way you live, work, interact with others, and help make the world a better place?
So active listening is a really crucial communication skill that involves fully focusing on and comprehending what the speaker is saying, rather than simply hearing the words and waiting for our turn to speak, right?
You just listened to our guest, Peter Novak. Peter is the CEO and founder of Strictly Speaking Group. He's a communications training expert specializing in high-stakes speaker coaching and presentation strategy. In this episode, we talk about active listening for conflict resolution. My name is Desiree Timmans, your podcast host. Let's go! Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
The topic we are going to discuss is active listening for conflict resolution. The first question I would like to ask you, what is active listening?
So active listening is a really crucial communication skill that involves fully focusing on and comprehending what the speaker is saying, rather than simply hearing the words and waiting for our turn to speak, right? Which is what happens all the time. And it goes beyond passive listening and involves techniques such as paraphrasing or asking clarifying questions, and then also empathizing. And so it's a very powerful tool for conflict resolution because it promotes more mutual understanding and it can reduce misunderstandings. And it really fosters an open dialogue. I mean, when you think about it, Desiree, when you feel heard, when someone says that they hear what you're saying and they can even frame it themselves and say it themselves, then it makes you feel valued. And that in turn makes you feel more willing to trust that person.
I absolutely agree with you. And that's true. When you feel heard, you really feel valued. So if we then look at resolving conflict and active listening, how is it linked to each other?
There's a famous psychologist named Adam Grant. You may have heard of him. And in one of his most recent books, he talks about negotiation. And negotiation is something we do all the time. We do it with our partners at home. We do it at work for deadlines. We're constantly involved in negotiation. And he said, the three components that make a really good negotiator is, first of all, that they find common ground. Really important to do. The second is that they present fewer arguments. And when we're negotiating with someone, you tend to always focus on your arguments, what you're saying. And so good negotiators, he says, present fewer of those. And the third point, and I think this might be helpful for your audience too, is that they show a scientist-like curiosity, which means that scientists are really good at asking questions. And that's the basis and the foundation of negotiating when you've got a problem that you're trying to solve together. And some research has suggested that the best negotiators actually end 20% of their conversations with questions. And so questioning is part of an active listening technique that really helps the other person speak more, so that we can understand what their needs are. I can go into a little bit more detail. One of the things that's challenging for us is that we have a lot of unconscious bias, and that gets in the way of building relationships. We have a natural tendency to see the other side, you know, the other person oftentimes as maybe less intelligent. We see ourselves as more skilled, as more reasonable oftentimes. And so these partisan perceptions can really cause us to expect the worst from our counterparts. There was a famous story of an attorney, a partner at a law firm, who went to a junior attorney and said, look, we're going to be representing this client for their defense. I'd like you to get to know them really well. Give me a brief. Help me understand, take the weekend, really delve into who they are and how we can defend them. So the junior partner comes back after the weekend, puts down a really great document, and the partner looks at the document and says, this is very thorough. This is amazing. Now, we're actually on the other side of this. We're not defending this client. Now that you know and understand them, I want you to go look at how we might work with them in a different way. And it's really about knowing your audience.
Indeed. And preparing.
And preparing, exactly. And whenever we have a conflict at work, one of the most important things to do is a mind shift. Instead of thinking of the other person as we're having a conflict with them, turn it around and say to yourself, look, we have a problem. You are a problem-solving partner with me. We are going to solve this problem together, rather than thinking it's your side and my side. And if you look at that person as a problem-solving partner, then that has a significant change on your mindset as well.
Because then you have already common ground and you have connected. You are both in there to look for solutions for the problem.
That's exactly right. Now, the hard part sometimes is really understanding and figuring out what the person really wants and needs. And one of the best techniques to do that is to know the difference between positions and interests. Positions are usually the thing that's stated up front. Let me give you an example. I want to work from home, or I want to work from the office. Right? It's a really good, perfect example of this is my position. What happens with interests is that you actually go underneath and say, well, why do you want to work from home? So Desiree, if I asked you, why do you want to work from home? What might you say?
It gives you the ability to work with a global team. When you invest in that, you really learn a lot. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm actually working from home right now. And you are in California, I think.
I am in California, exactly. And oftentimes, if you ask people to list why they want to work from home, working with a global team virtually from home is an amazing opportunity. It's fantastic. You get to know these team members from all around the world. Other people might say, I have more quality time with my family. I don't have to commute anymore. I'm saving 2 to 3 hours a day of my life. My quality of life is better when I'm working from home. Now, other people might say, working from the office, I do better work when I'm with a team individually. I can communicate better with people in person. But basically, the difference between positions and interests, the position is sort of the demand, what you want, but the interests are what are underneath it. And how do you get to those? Now, the challenging part is knowing, and you have to start with yourself. How do you unpack your own interests with things? And this is whenever you've got an emotional response to something, right? Something negative, you should ask yourself some questions. And this is really helpful to reflect on. Whenever you are faced with an emotion in yourself, a negative emotion, you should ask yourself and reflect on some of these questions. What makes this important to me? What would having this mean to me? What does this represent to me? Who else might be affected if I get this response? This is a really good one because you're thinking about other people. If I want to work in the office and I demand that everybody else comes into the office, how might that affect other people? And then another one that's also about the others is, what do I think is important to the other person about this issue? So for example, if my manager says you have to come into the office and I say I want to work from home, if I ask him, what's important about coming into the office? What are the qualities? What are the things that you think are sacred? And then have that person explain. And you can say, well, let me tell you how I can achieve the same things by working from home.
Absolutely. So position is important.
Position is usually the statement of things that you want.
It's a desire, actually.
It's a desire, exactly. And underneath that are the reasons why. And that's what you need to get to when you're negotiating with someone about any topic. What are the reasons why this is important to you? And when you do that, and when you answer it for yourself first, then you can begin to ask the other person.
But sometimes that's very difficult, Peter, because If a manager says, well, I want you to be in the office because then I can see you and then I know that you will be working and not hanging around at home, then how do you handle that? Because actually what you have to do is give a response and explain why you can do the same at home.
Sure. And you can talk about your interests as well. It's like, well, let me tell you why working from home allows me to do better work. And then you can explain why, and you can give all of your reasons. I have to drive into work. It's an hour and a half just to get into work. That time could be better spent actually working rather than commuting. I'm happy to install a tracker that documents my time, or I'm happy to check in with you every week and give you a detailed list of how I spent my time and what I was doing. There are so many other ways that you can achieve the same results. If it's about, you want to make sure I'm working with my team, look, I schedule 15-minute meetings, you know, just for coffee with them throughout the week. It's a great way for me to check in with them, make sure that we're there. I'm not losing my personal relationships. I'm understanding. There's lots of things back and forth, but understand why your manager wants you to come into work. Understand the reasons behind it, and then you can talk after that.
Okay, that's a great one. And what I'm always looking for is a kind of framework that when you are in the situation that you have a framework that you can refer to in your head and say, okay, what do I need to do now because I'm stuck? And that's actually also what you were saying. You make it bigger. You ask questions. You think about the other person. So do you use a framework for active listening for conflict resolution?
There is. There are many frameworks. Here's a simple one. It's called EARS, E-A-R-S, which is perfect for active listening. And the E in EARS stands for empathy. Something we don't often have when we're negatively affected. My manager says, come into work, you know, and I'm like, ah. But if you start from a framework of empathy and say, okay, look, this is a problem we're going to solve together, it decreases the stakes a little bit. So you're not as emotional when you respond. So the E is empathy. Really understand where this person is coming from. The second is active listening. And active listening is sometimes a challenge. We do an exercise oftentimes in workshops where we have a conversation. And I would ask you to listen to the very last letter of the last word that I said, and then start your conversation with a word that begins with that letter. So if I said, how are you doing today, Desiree? You would say, every day is a challenge, but I'm doing really well today. Uh-huh. And then the end of your sentence ended with a why. And I say, yes, I completely understand. And what that does is it forces you not to think about what your response is going to be. We do that all the time when we're communicating. We think about what I'm going to say next rather than really listening to the person.
So it helps you to be in the moment, to be present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing that's really helpful is to ask open-ended questions, not closed questions. And it's really important to understand the difference. Let me ask you some closed questions. Desiree, where do you live?
In Brussels.
In Brussels. Do you like it there?
Yes.
Now, how long have you lived there?
Well, 20 years.
Ah, that's a long time. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Netherlands, near the border of Belgium.
Okay. So you can see that closed-ended questions usually expect a very quick response, usually yes or no. Or just a simple one word. Where did you grow up? In the Netherlands. You know, where do you live now? I live in Brussels. Do you like it there? Yes. Right. Your answers were short and to the point. If I said something like, Desiree, do you miss living in the Netherlands?
That's a good question, Peter. Do I miss living in the Netherlands? No, I don't, because I feel at home always where I am. So that's a good thing. But of course, I enjoy going back to the Netherlands.
So all of a sudden, you can see the difference in the quality of answer that you've given. When you ask open-ended questions, it's unscripted responses. You don't know how the person is going to respond. And it invites follow-up questions about, well, tell me, what do you like about Brussels? It gives more control to you rather than to me. And it can only be answered by your unique thoughts or statements.
Yes, which is personal. And then you feel heard and that the other person values that you are going to answer the question and that the person will listen.
It empowers you to share what's important to you. So that's the active listening part and some techniques to really understand that. The R in ears, so we did empathy, active listening. R is reframing or rephrasing. And that's to check to make sure that you've understood whether you're getting feedback, whether you're, you know, in a negotiation. To make sure that you aren't missing anything that you've heard. So what I say is, what I hear you saying, Desiree, about working from home is that you really value the global community of workers that you're allowed to work with, despite location and time, and that you're really able to connect with them and learn from them. And that's really valuable to you. Did I get that right?
Definitely, Peter. I appreciate that summary.
And so you're checking to see if there are any gaps, because when you rephrase it for them, they might say, no, what's really important to me is, so it gives them the opportunity again to change it and to fix it and to give you more data, more information. And then you'd say, okay, great, that's new. So it's both the global network of people, but it's also the freedom to not have to commute into work. And then you can say, yes, exactly, that's right. Great. And then you can begin a conversation. The last step is summarizing. And that is very similar to rephrasing, but it is a shorter, briefer version of it. And you can also state where you are in summarizing. You feel that the global connection is really important. And what I feel also is that it's important to be in person in order to get those. You know, when you go after a meeting, you're walking down the hall with somebody, a lot of work gets done and relationships get built. And that's important for me as your manager. So you can summarize both points and then you can begin to say, so how do we solve this problem together?
That's a really good one.
So that's why ears is so effective. Empathy, active listening, reflecting, and then summarizing. People say, we have one mouth and two ears, which means we need to listen twice as much as we speak.
Yes, I'm all ears.
There's another interesting study about listening that came out recently, and that hearing loss is one of the precursors to dementia later in life. Listening and hearing as a sense is a really important factor in our cognitive brain development and in the way that we respond to other people.
Yes, and also music. You can really be moved by certain music. For me, it's classical music. It moves me.
Absolutely. I also work a lot in American Sign Language for the deaf community. And the language itself is incredibly rich. And people don't understand the nuances of how a physical and gestural language really works. So, for example, I translated Shakespeare into American Sign Language with a team of deaf artists. And it was an amazing experience. Very different from active listening. You listen through the eyes in sign language, and it's fascinating.
Yes, I once lived in Rotterdam, and there in the subway, when I was going to university, there was also a school for deaf people, and they were always doing sign language, and I found it fascinating.
It is. In a crowded bar or a concert, you can have a conversation with somebody 20 feet away or 50 feet away from you, because it's a visual language. Yeah, there's some great advantages to sign language.
Okay, good to know. And then do you have for us some examples of IT clients that came to you and that wanted to learn active listening for conflict resolution?
As a matter of fact, we do a workshop called Negotiation as Collaboration. And what we do is we go through very similarly to what we talked about today. And most of them are in tech, most of them are in Silicon Valley, and we work through these techniques. Then we give them a case study, and we do a case study that has them trying to negotiate a very complicated issue, and they read through the case study to know their role, and they try and negotiate with the other person. It's a very complicated case study, but it's also in very high stakes. you know, you have a cure for a disease that will help millions of people and you need to get this product and then somebody else also needs the product and there's very little of it. How do you both win in this situation? And it's very tricky, but it works really well. And it's a great way for people to understand how to get to the interests of the other party. And when you do, you can almost always find a resolution. So that's the framework of what we do with folks in tech. And it's really fun to work on, really fun to give them examples of how to turn closed-ended questions into open-ended questions. Instead of, did you like the movie? It's like, what were your favorite parts of this movie? How to reframe phrases, how to open the invitation to someone to say, hey, I noticed we have some different opinions on this. Can we talk about this? Or can we share our ideas and find a way to work together and solve the problem together? And when you come at it from that framework and that openness, people will not hold their own positions so closely. And if you use these techniques, guarantee you both in your personal life at home and in your work life, you'll be able to have a much more rich relationship with other people. And they won't find you as aggressive. They won't find you overbearing. They will really look to you as a problem-solving partner.
So when you have a conversation together, it's important not to create a win-lose situation.
That's right.
A win-win situation. And with active listening, you can create a win-win situation because you are interested in what the other person's feelings and thoughts are and how you can come together to resolve a conflict. And do you have a specific example of a conflict and how it was solved with active listening?
I could probably give you one that is about a relationship. I mean, the work example that we talked about in terms of working from home or working from the office is a good example. But in a divorce that was happening with a couple, both of them wanted the house. I want the house. No, I want the house. And then as the couple began to explain their interests, they began to see commonalities. And they came up with a resolution that was really creative. They decided they would live in different parts of the house together, wait until the market had increased a little bit, because rents in the area were very expensive and they both had issues for not moving out. The mother-in-law was staying in the house, so that meant not relocating her. The kids were in school nearby. So all of those issues came to the fore. And when they began to realize that I want the house, no, I want the house, they began to see that they could compromise in a way that benefited everybody, not just themselves, but everybody else in their immediate family. That's how powerful negotiation can be, I think, and really understanding people's interests and actively listening to them, not judging them, empathizing with them, understanding what they're going through. It's a powerful way to ensure that people feel heard and respected.
So if I'm right, what I'm hearing you say is the willingness to be open to each other and to listen to each other. When you are in divorce, to see what is the best resolution for all of us. I also learned that you always try to narrow down your own argument. I want this, the desires, the positions. And I was fortunate to have a person in my life who learned me, but there's much more. There are many more solutions. And it's better even for you and for all of us. So why not look at that? Then when that was explained to me and I experienced that, it was wonderful. And then you feel good and then it's okay.
Exactly. You feel much better about all of it, right?
Yeah, you feel heard.
You feel heard. You feel respected.
And you learn there's always a solution outside your own desires.
And you improve the relationship.
Indeed.
You know, I guess what I would say is it behooves you. It's helpful to remember that when you're at work, you may be in a relationship with this person for years, which is why you don't want to play a game that's win and lose. You want to play a game that's win-win as much as possible because you're staying in these relationships, possibly for very long periods of time, however long you're in that company. And so making the effort to really see them as a problem-solving partner and to keep the relationship and communication open, it's a lot of work, but it can be very beneficial for your own well-being.
And sometimes it's an art to do that because I had some conflicts at work and I talked about it with my manager because it was with a person from another department. And then actually a year later, we were in the same training and it was about listening and understanding. And then the problem was solved because we had to talk to each other. So that for me was also an eye opener and a really good thing to experience that. And also for the other person, because the tension was gone.
That's right. And you can thank them at the end of it. Thank you for your willingness to have this conversation with me. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah, that was really powerful.
Yep. Very, very much so. Good.
So now we have talked about active listening and conflict. For the listeners who would like to know more about it, do you have some resources that you can recommend to them?
Sure. There are two books that I think are really helpful, and they will give you also a step-by-step breakdown. And the first one is called Difficult Conversations, and that's by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. And Crucial Conversations is the second one by Al Switzler. They're both great for helping. It's about conflict resolution and really coming at it from a perspective that I think is non-threatening, is overall very, very helpful for folks. Helps deepen relationships. And it's not just for conflict resolution. It's for having better relationships with people, ultimately.
And feeling better when you communicate.
That's right.
And also, my last talk was with Chris Lipp. I don't know if you know him, but it was about his book, Magnetic, How to Persuade and Inspire Others. And there, actually, the same came back, that it's always important to connect, to be understanding, to be open, to be willing to talk about things. But then my problem is, Peter, sometimes I get frustrated and then I forget all of this.
Right. This is a practice. You have to learn to practice it. And the more you start with open-ended questions. So for example, if you have children who are 7 to 15 years old and you say, how was school today? They will say, good, and not much else. If you instead say, hey, what were a few things that you learned in school today? Then they can't say good. They have to respond with something else. Those are the types of things you can continue to do and start to practice every day. So much more helpful in developing relationships with people to really use those open-ended questions. And the best piece of advice I give for people is, oh, tell me more about that. Just the simple phrase, oh, tell me more about that. Doing that with people will make them feel like you are their best friend. They really will feel different about you. And it's great for introverts too, because just by saying that phrase, the other person will start talking more and you can be more inquisitive. You can be the one asking the questions more and letting the other person talk. It's really helpful.
I agree with you. And I think what is also important is to be authentic, because people can feel that, you can feel that between us, but when you're not authentic, they will not respond.
Exactly.
You can use techniques, but if it's not authentic, if you're doing it because, okay, I have to do it, it doesn't work. You really should be open to have a better relationship.
Yeah, you can hear it in the tone. You can see it in their physicality. You understand where they're coming from.
Yes. And do you also have some other recommendations for people?
You know, I think those two books have the clearest sort of examples and structures and advice and actual language that you can use.
Okay. And besides that, I think you're also giving training about it. So what I will do is I will make sure that I include in the show notes a link to your website, because then people can have a look.
Absolutely. We do a lot of different trainings and active listening is one of my favorites.
We are already coming to the end of the podcast, but my last question to you is there Anything that you want to share with the listeners that I didn't ask you yet?
I would just say that I want to emphasize that active listening isn't just a skill for resolving conflicts. It's a skill that can improve all aspects of your personal and professional lives. It can lead to better relationships, better collaboration at work, more effective communication overall. So even if it's outside conflict resolution, practicing active listening is a valuable tool worth developing. And if you have kids at home or a partner, you can actually practice using sort of games. There are ways that you can do it that I think are really helpful. Play the alphabet game where you have a conversation. I have to start with A, then you have to start with B. Go back and forth in a conversation, and your first comment has to start with that letter of the alphabet. That's a great way to play. And then do that last exercise that we talked about where you have to listen to the very last word of what someone says and the last letter of that word. Start doing it for fun. And if you can do it with children early on and get them to practice this and practice open-ended questions, oh my gosh, you're giving them a tool for the rest of their lives that will help them be better communicators.
And that's wonderful. That's what we all want, because then we get a better world. And who doesn't want it?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Peter, for being on the podcast. It was really great to talk with you and really insightful. So thank you very much for that.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining another episode of the Help to Grow Talk podcast. For more information and episodes, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and visit helptogrowtalk.buzzsprout.com. That is helptogrowtalk.buzzsprout.com. Tune in next time.